Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze and listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in. Now, there's a song about spacious places. There's a certain lure to it that promises fulfillment for those who long for that kind of life, who love and long for wide open spaces. However, written in 1934 by Cole Porter and made popular by Bing Crosby, both of whom I imagine were likely performing against type, it strikes me as an anthem for the prototypical individual cowboy, the Marlboro man, the one who became immediately recognizable as the symbol of Reagan-era rugged individualism with its promulgation of trickle-down economics and pull-yourself-up-by-your-own-bootstraps approach to life's difficulties. Rugged individualism has its appeal, I suppose. But I'm not sure this is what the psalmist had in mind when this hymn was written. Spacious places. What are they for you and me, and why might they be important? The psalmist sings praise to God for all the wonders of creation, celebrating in sacred memory the miracles of the Exodus. After a narrow escape from bondage in Egypt, crossing the Red Sea on dry land, and 40 years of wandering in the Sinai Desert, Joshua leads the children of Israel across the rolled back Jordan River into the Promised Land, a spacious place for a people who had spent a long time looking and longing for a place to settle and be at home. In spite of Palestine's semi-arid state, it was for the Hebrew people of that age a land flowing with milk and honey. There is life to be celebrated in liberation and finding home. There is deep memory of the joy and gratitude for finding the land of promise, this spacious place. When we read this text in Bible study, I was especially taken with this phrase, "You have brought us out to a spacious place." It's such a lovely word of hope and possibility. Other versions sing of a place of ease, a place of abundance, a wealthy place, a well-watered place. Seems important in a desert land. Lots of latitude in translating the Hebrew, but spacious place for me is intriguing. One image that sprang to mind, aside from the wide open expanse of the rough and tumble West, as penned by Cole Porter, is hiking in mountains and woods. I'm glad Robbie and Bill are here this morning, and this may speak to you. I'm not an inveterate trekker, but I know you are, and I know others in the church are. But I have vivid pictures of hiking through a dense, dark forest, and at the end of the trail, coming through an opening in the trees to a glorious meadow or a shimmering lake, bringing us out into a spacious place, a place of beauty and wonder. I think this is the kind of place God intended for us from the beginning and longs for us to find. Eden? Paradise, perhaps? I think it's meant to be if we turn our attention in that direction. Now, it's not always clear why the lectionary committee connects the texts that they do. But in exploring the other lectionary text for today, I wondered if I could make connections to spacious places in considering them. I didn't get all four in, but three out of four. The most challenging was the lovely but difficult text from Jeremiah. Can we make a case that being in exile in Babylon, or anywhere for that matter, can be considered a spacious place? Unlike the situation with the psalmist, where the painful, difficult times of slavery and wilderness wandering are in the past, Jeremiah's people are suffering right now in their exile. From the psalmist's perspective, there have been post-Exodus trials and tribulations, challenges and difficulties, tests and burdens, but God has kept the people among the living and has not let their feet slip. God has brought them out to a spacious place. But for Jeremiah's people, terrible times and turmoil are just beginning. There's little hope on the horizon as the city of Jerusalem with its glorious temple has been destroyed. The king and the court, the high priest, the artists and craftspeople, the higher classes have all been dragged off to Babylon. The lower classes and the outsiders have been left to endure in the rubble as best they can. Their lives are totally disrupted and chaotic. And here comes Jeremiah, the outlier prophet from the sticks, who has excoriated the people for their bad behavior and failure to keep the covenant, with another word of challenge, but also a word of hope. The hard word is that the exiles are going to be gone for a long time. The hope is that life goes on even in Babylon. Classic bad news, good news. Thus says the Holy One of Hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and raise children. Find spouses for your children that they may bear children. Multiply there and do not decrease. But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile. And pray to the Holy One on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. In its welfare, you will find your welfare. In spite of the prediction of other well-connected court prophets to the contrary, Jeremiah insists that they will be in Babylon for quite a while. There were other prophets that said, oh, you'll be back in 2 years, right? It was a great debate between Jeremiah and Hananiah. Jeremiah insists they will be in Babylon for quite a while, so they should adjust. Learn to live with their new neighbors. Can we make a case that Jeremiah is encouraging the exiles to create something spacious for themselves in a strange place? By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and there we wept. When we remembered Zion on the willows, there we hung up our harps. For there our captors asked of us songs, and our tormentors asked for mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. But how could we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand wither. Let my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not set Jerusalem above my highest joy. Friends, for people who sang such a lament, how would they adjust to their captivity? How would they learn to live with their exile? How would they make peace with their captors? Is it Jeremiah's prophetic word of possibility and hope absurd? Somehow in Jeremiah's view, God's goodness and grace were not limited to the promised land, to the chosen people, to any one time and place. This God that Jeremiah served was God anywhere and everywhere. If this was news to the exiles, could it also be good news? God was bigger, more gracious, more loving than they had ever imagined. Living long in Babylonian exile might not be ideal, but God, through Jeremiah, tells the people that God will be with them wherever they are, in whatever circumstances. Can we claim this same truth for ourselves today? That God will be with us wherever we are, in whatever circumstances, even in the toughest of times. Dan Clendenin writes, "There are periods of darkness and gloom when we feel far from home, and it's natural to pray for exodus deliverance." Christian maturity, he writes, means putting one foot in front of another and remembering that Yahweh is no less present in exilic darkness than in exodus deliverance. The Holy One turned the sea into dry land. They passed through the river on foot. There we rejoiced in God who rules by might forever, whose eyes keep watch on the nations. Let the rebellious not exalt themselves. Bless God, all you peoples. Let the sound of God's praise be heard, who has kept us among the living and has not let our feet slip. For you, O God, have tested us. You've tried us as silver is tried. You brought us into the net, and you laid burdens on our backs. You let people ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water. Yet you have brought us out to a spacious place. Alan Bream writes of Jeremiah's letter, "He has also pointed them to the hope that in the midst of mundane routines of life in foreign exile, they could find God's peace. Despite all their disappointed hopes and dreams, they might just find themselves having the experience recounted by the psalmist. After going through fire and water," he writes, "just when they may have thought their life was over, God has brought them to a spacious place. A place where, much to their own surprise and contrary to their expectations, they could find peace. It wasn't where they thought they would live out their lives, but it was a place where they could thrive." Yes, even life in Babylon can be a spacious place if you seek the welfare of the city where God has sent us into exile, into trouble, and pray for the Holy One on its behalf. For in its welfare you will find your welfare. For in its spaciousness you will find spaciousness for yourselves. Well, finally, let's look at this beloved tale of Jesus and the 10 lepers, all of whom came to him pleading for healing. "Have mercy on us." You probably heard the plight in those days of people who suffered from a variety of skin diseases labeled as leprosy. Those people were labeled impure, and they were totally cast out from a purity culture. As they moved in and around their villages, they were required to announce themselves by shouting, "Unclean," to warn the people to avoid their approach. Of course, Jesus was having none of this and willingly added lepers to the outcasts for whom he cared, to whom he ministered. As these 10 children of God approached him with their plea for mercy, he responded by telling them to go and show themselves to the priest. It may seem curious to us, but it would have been standard practice for them, for those healed, to have the priest verify, to certify their healing, which would allow them to be welcomed back into the community. This healing was more than cure. It was a transformation of their lives, a welcome home for them. So I don't think it's particularly surprising that they all hurry on their way rejoicing. I can imagine they were ecstatic to find the disease peeling from their skin, so excited they could think of nothing else but following Jesus' instruction to do what they needed to secure their inclusion again, to get home as fast as they could. The lack of a thank you was maybe more of an oversight than a deliberate snub. Jesus had surely offered them new life, and I doubt Jesus needed a thank you to confirm the good things that he'd done. It isn't hard to see that Jesus has brought all 10 to spacious places, both in the healing of their bodies and in their restitution to the community. But what of this one who returned, the Samaritan, the double outcast, if you will? It had been tolerable for him to hang out with the others when they were all experiencing the same debilitating disease, a company of outliers just struggling to survive. But as a Samaritan, I wonder if the priest would have been so willing to certify his healing. And would his fellow travelers have included him now that their common bond of disease had been broken? Speculation, sure. But I think it goes to why he recognized how important it was for him to turn back and thank Jesus. Something more had unfolded in his life. Gratitude had taken hold and made his place a little more spacious than the others. Doesn't that sound right? When we recognize how God has taken care of us, when we see how we have been made whole, when are not our lives then enriched by gratitude? The healed Samaritan discovered something more, something larger, grace and gratitude, healing and wholeness are incredibly spacious places. Alan Bream again writes, "Faith entrusts oneself to God's loving care because of a conviction that God is trustworthy. Even when we find ourselves in a place we didn't want to be, if we can let go of our expectations and accept the grace to thrive in surprising places, we may discover that we can count on God never to forsake us, to see us through whatever comes our way, to bring us to the spacious place where we can thrive. Bless God, all you peoples. Let the sound of God's praise be heard, who has kept us among the living and has not let our feet slip. For you, O God, have tested us. You have tried us as silver is tried. You brought us into the net. You laid burdens on our backs. You let people ride over our heads. We went through fire and water, yet you have brought us into a spacious place. Thanks be to God. Amen.